Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
And today's exciting journey is exactly that. We have a very exciting guest with us today, don't we, Jeannie?
We do. I just can't wait to hear what he says. This is an interesting story.
Yeah, it is, because you and I aren't really acquainted with the life that David Jackson is talking about in his book. And we are kind of removed. We have gangs in Portland, but I have not directly been involved with any part of a gang life myself, and I don't believe you were either.
No, So this is like a whole new world opening to us for us to look into, which is really a wonderful thing.
Yes. So we're here ready to help our listeners understand what it's like to not remain a victim, but to survive, and not only do that, be successful at what you do. So today we are talking with respected author, activist, and educator David Jackson, or OG1, as he is fondly called. David Jackson has been making a huge stamp on the world by delivering messages to youth through firsthand experiences, pushing them to live their life to its fullest potential. Over the years, he's dedicated himself to breaking the cycle of crime, hopelessness, and despair that many youth face today. David is no stranger to the issues that vex our communities. He's born in Falls Church, Virginia, and raised in Watts, California. Now, you came along at a different time than when I was in Watts, but I was down there the year that the riots broke out, and that was kind of a scary time. And like some other young men in these days, David has had his share of run-ins with gang life, the ills that affect our communities, and obstacles that one must conquer to become successful. The difference with his story is that it is a part of history. Most will never forget the story of the Ecclesia Athletic Association, the EAA, an association that was built under the umbrella of the Watts Christian Center School and Training Program as a religious and athletic sector. And despite receiving many awards and accolades for their sports performance, the death of a young girl is what got the attention of the world. Terms like sadistic cult was thrown around. Even the critically acclaimed Oprah Winfrey sat down with EAA's founder, Eldridge Brassard Jr., on her show as the world held its breath, waiting for the story to unfold. At the center of the association, feeling like the story was never really told, David chooses to do so in his recently released novel, The Man Behind the Music, The Life and Times of David Jackson, Jr. And it isn't a book that just talks about the death of this young girl, but of heartache and triumph and success. So the world recognizes him today as OG1. He's the DJ for the Portland Trailblazers. He's worked with many other names that you would recognize, too, including Michael Jordan, P. Diddy, and Jamie Foxx. But he has really received, in my opinion, most of his accolades for what he's done, with awards won in the community for his efforts with youth activism that include the 2012 Emerald Award, the Elicor Media Award in 2011, KPTV's Oregon's 12 for Kids' Sake Award, the Police Activities League, Unsung Hero Award. You have done so much in your life. And, I mean, it sounds like you've really got to be old, but you're not. So welcome to our program, David. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Welcome.
We're really excited because I think that it's time that more people understood what it's like to be tossed into a gang environment, to feel like that's where you really fit. And what do we do with kids when they need to come out of that? Because our news here in Portland, it seems like almost nightly there's something in the news about you know, a shooting or something, and a lot of times these kids are connected to a gang.
Exactly.
So, yeah, could you start us out by telling us what is the Ecclesia Athletic Association? What was it? Because
I think
we need to wrap our mind around that to start the rest of the interview better.
Well, what Ecclesia was, and I think during the time everything was going on, the media had it mixed up because they were calling the Ecclesia Athletic Association a church, when in fact it wasn't. It was actually an athletic department of our church, which was Watts Christian Center. And so the Ecclesia aspect was the sports-oriented, where we trained and, you know, everything from track, basketball, and those things, and we did exhibitions and things like that. So, but when the media reported it, it was all kind of jumbled together as Ecclesia as being this religious church. And so that's basically what it is. Ecclesia was an athletic association that was a part of or a department of our church.
Okay. So who was Eldred Broussard?
Well, Eldred Broussard, he played a few roles. I have to really point it in my life. Initially, my pastor, and then became like a father figure to me. And mentor, all those things. And he was actually the person that steered me away from the whole gang lifestyle in L.A.
Mm-hmm. So you saw the good side of him.
Yeah, and it was so interesting because, you know, again, I got involved in gangs when I was 10 years old. And, you know, typical situation, my mom, a single parent, I'm in the middle of Watts where there was not a lot of options in terms of outlets or resources in terms of recreation. There weren't nonprofit organizations that, you know, they focused on helping young people. So my options were limited to being either, you know, a gang member, a drug dealer, you know, a pimp or, you know, athlete or someone that got beat up on. And most of my friends were in gangs. So it was just kind of a natural thing. And so all the negative things that came along with that lifestyle was just kind of like what happens when you get on a basketball team. You know you're going to get elbowed. That's a part of the game. Games, it was like, you know, you're going to get shot at. You know the potential in it, but what else, what other choices were there?
How did the choices come about then that... What happened? Because in your book, you're talking about a day when your bicycle is stolen. How did
yes.
you start shifting to a new place in life?
So for me, you know, when I was involved in the gangs and stuff, I had a particular attitude. And my attitude up until that point, because of my past experience and being in churches at an early age where, you know, I went to church with my mom all the time, and I had saw a lot of negative things that I thought that someone at my age shouldn't have seen. So I associated that with God and with, you know, positive leaders, you know, that talked about positive things. So when I got in the game, my attitude was no adult could come and talk to me about positive things, because when everything would go down, none of them would be around. So if someone was coming to shoot at me, the local pastor wouldn't come out and protect me. You know, where were they when I, you know, I needed food? Where were they when I needed that mentor to steer me away? It was like it was limited to when I went to church. That was the only time I could be in a safe place or, you know, positive message, or when I was actually in the church building. But outside of that, Monday through Saturday, I didn't have that. So with Eldridge, you know, when the situation happened for me in terms of my bike getting stolen, it was the first time I experienced a pastor who came out of a church setting and went and confronted the gang members themselves, as if it was no different in terms of posture than what I was getting from the gang. In terms of that feeling of protection, that was the first time I had someone in his type of status that said, you know what, no, I'm not going to allow these things to happen to you. And so that was the thing that impressed me from the start, was that he went out on a limb, really, in a sense, risking his life before me.
And so that wasn't the first time he'd done that, was it? I remember in reading your book when your mother had gone so over the line in disciplining you and beat you so terribly that
yeah.
you would wanted to get away from her and never come back, but instead you went to this Eldridge Broussard and
right.
spoke with him, and then he spoke with her.
Right, exactly. So again, there was another case where it was out of a religious environment that here I had a pastor that showed genuine concern for me, and it wasn't with, at that time, what I associated with hell, fire, and brimstone. Like, okay, you're going to go to hell and all bad is going to break loose if you don't come inside this building. And so he, for me, it just looked like, okay, here's a person that believes in God, that he must care about me because he stepped out of that environment to come take interest in my world, what was going on in my world. And I never had that before in my life, period, from any adult.
So what
except
went wrong?
Except for the gang.
So what went wrong? It all sounds so good, but
yeah. So
something
so,
went
know,
wrong.
Yeah. So once I got out of the gangs, you know, he was the person that introduced me into sports. You know, I got a chance to train and run track professionally. I got a chance to play in the summer pro league, which was the NBA Associated. I got a chance to experience those things being away from the game. He was the one that introduced me to those things. The issue where I felt everything went wrong was when you had this dynamic person who was very influential, very gifted in the gospel in terms of the scriptures, but there was no checks and balances.
Mm.
In terms of, you know, it's kind of like I call it the Michael Jackson syndrome, where you have someone that you look up to and this person is great, but things that a normal person would look at and say, something doesn't seem quite right, but who's going to tell Michael Jackson that something it doesn't seem quite right? And so when you have somebody in that position, but they don't have people that really will tell them the truth, it's not that their intention is to do negative or anything like that. It's just we're human. And, you know, being human, we're going to make some mistakes. We're going to make some bad judgments sometimes. But we hope that we have someone that cares about us enough to say, hey, you know, that decision you made might not be the right one, or I can't quite agree with what you said in that situation. And here Eldridge was a good guy, but he was so charismatic that it got to the point where the adults there would not hold him accountable to things that they saw. I know they had to have seen that might not have been good judgments. And so you go so long where that happens, then it starts becoming more obvious that decisions are starting to happen again. For me, it shifted from the gospel of Christ and God to the gospel of hell.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so the focus became more attention of how close can I get to Eldridge Broussard and be considered, you know, what was coined off of L.
Mm.
And to me, that was the downfall, the beginning of the downfall of the whole group. And then, you know, when the incidents just happened, those things really, in my opinion, just brought everything to light. Well, you know, we hear the cliche, you know, what's done in the dark comes to light. That incident with his daughter being beaten and then dying, that just brought to light everything else that was going on.
Yeah, you make a good point there. But what you're saying in as we're talking here, it's a young person needing someone in the adult world to stand up for them makes a powerful difference and to protect them. You didn't have that until this man came along, so naturally there's this feeling of safety with him and like he's looking over you as a protector.
Yeah. I mean, and it was on all levels for me because he was the first person that I actually opened up to and talked to about my feelings about anything. Because prior to that, I had nobody in my life that I talked to about my actual feelings and what I was going through as a young man. My mom was too busy trying to just take care of me and provide for me, and she was a woman, so it was things that I wouldn't say to her, you know, just because I didn't want to put my issues on her as a mother because I saw she was struggling enough.
And then after she had been so brutally physical with you that point in time, and then especially after she had renounced you and your brother, I mean,
yeah.
You did not really feel a big level of trust in communicating with her, for it was my understanding after reading the book.
Right, right. I mean, me and her, my communication with her, again, we didn't really actually start mending our relationship and dealing with some of those issues until after I wrote the book. We had
okay.
never really communicated.
Okay, so let's move you forward a little bit here because I don't want to run out of time, but you have had a lot of things happen since Elle passed away, and you started, you know, managing your own financial life and marrying
right.
and having your children and all of these things. What got you started involved in the community? How did this happen?
Well, actually, I have to give credit back to Eldridge because that was a part of our group. You know, our church is that we went out into local parks and remodeled the local gym there, and we were involved with community things. So it just became a habit that, you know, that's just what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to do positive things and give back. So when I finally got settled in Oregon, for me it was just I have to, with everything that I've gone through, I know that someone has gone through maybe not the exact thing, but the feeling of hopelessness, you know, having, quote, bad things happen to you, but what do you do from here? And so
now,
I decided that I didn't want to talk about it, that I wanted to be an example of what it meant to not let your circumstances dictate your outcome.
So at one point you found an ad. Was it an ad for the Campfire Association looking for
yes.
someone? Okay, tell
yes,
us about that.
Looking,
that was a fascinating part of your book.
Yeah, so they were looking. I was working at McDonald's, and they were saw the ad about a gang prevention specialist. And so I knew I had a history with dealing with gangs, and I wanted to do something positive. So I made the call, and I said, hey, you know, I'm interested in the job. Did the interview, and immediately they hired me on, you know. Of course, I didn't mention at the time any of my association with the Ecclesia situation, but they brought me in, and I helped put together gang prevention programs that served over like 10 schools between Portland, Beaverton, and then the Gresham area at the time.
And that's called the Gang Peace Program, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. So what did you do in that Gang Peace Program, and what has happened to programs like this today?
So my focus was really to create positive role models because I looked at my life and I saw that, you know, there are many great programs out there, but specifically with the gang issue. When you go to address gang members, you say, you should get out of the gang because it's a bad thing. They already know it's a bad situation, but what's the alternative? Are there going to be individuals who are willing to put their lives on the line like gang members, but for positive reasons? And if you're not willing to do that for a child, then you have no business with, you know, trying to do anything positive that's going to be long-lasting.
That makes
because
sense.
You hear gang members say that all the time. They say, okay, well, hey, you want me to get off the street, but are you going to be there? When someone comes to jump me and beat me up, will you stand in front of them? Will you stand in front of that gun? And if the answer is no, then you won't win that child at that point. So my program focused on building relationships with young people that intimate and that personal where that child knew that, yes, I'm going to help you get into school and I'm going to encourage you to do great academically. I'm going to help you, you know, with issues in your family. But at the bottom line, I will help be your protector. And in turn, as you grow and you get stronger, I want you to do the same thing for someone else.
Well, that's quite a testimony there, David, because the kids needed that, and you were a guy who'd been there and could stand up and say, I'll stand in the gap for you. I've got your back, so to speak.
Right.
And what did you involve these kids then in a great deal of athletic situations too, because your history has got like running, I couldn't believe, for training and all of the things that you were involved in. I could not imagine a schedule that heavy.
Yeah, so what was so interesting, with the kids I dealt with, you know, I really got into their lives. I didn't want to project my experience in terms of what I preferred, you know, whether it's athletics or anything like that, into them. So it was really about finding out what was each kid's passion and then encouraging them to do that and pursue that intensely. So that was my focus. And, you know, it was quite successful.
So how could people get a hold of help today if they've got kids involved in this or if there's young people that might listen and because they respect you perhaps? How would they get a hold of a group today or find your book?
Well, right now my book is available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon. They can order it through those. It will be re-released electronically through Ellicorp Publishing House sometime this year. So if people have iPads and electronic devices, they'd rather download it on, it'll be available then. In terms of Portland particularly, there are so many resources now. You know, sometimes I talk to kids and I say, coming from where I came from to Oregon, where they have so many resources and positive things, it's just a matter of choice for a child and their parents accessing it. But more importantly, getting people to understand the value in investing in kids. You know, and when I say invest in kids, you know, there are millions and millions of dollars that are being spent on a lot of things, to me, that are waste. But
I agree.
You look, if you just look at the prison system, it takes anywhere from $45,000 to probably up to $60,000 to house an inmate. What if you took that amount of money and invested in the kid before anything happens?
Yep.
To help
you probably
ensure,
wouldn't even need that big a chunk. Yeah.
Exactly. So, again, it's just changing the mindset of people where you got nonprofit organizations that are struggling now today to raise funding for something that should be a no-brainer to us as a collective whole in terms of our society. But it's backwards, and it's really a mindset. We should invest more in each individual child.
Is there one particular organization that would be a benefit for people to come alongside and invest some time and money?
I couldn't say any particular one because there's so many great ones. You have, you know, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. You have, you know, different organizations like that are doing amazing things, but, again, struggle financially to keep, you know, these programs going. The same thing that happened with me with Young Peace. As great as it was, as many children I was serving, the funding just got totally depleted out of the program. And so what do? Yeah, I had to go in an auditorium over 500 kids and say, you no longer have after-school program, you no longer have summer jobs, summer programming, you don't have these things.
That was so sad when I read that it just sort of fizzled and went away. I thought, oh, my gosh, what happened to the kids?
Yeah. And so, you know, I could see working, but, you know, again, those type of situations kind of makes it harder for someone that's positive to say, just stay positive when they look at the face of, okay, we're not that important because no one's willing to spend money on us until we do something
bad. Yeah, that's bad. Okay, so let's take you, I've got probably about 7 minutes left, so let's move you ahead to your music career. What went on with that? Because there's only two DJs in the whole NBA, plus you've somehow got this music thing going that came out of nowhere.
Well, you know, throughout my life, music has been, I would say, outlet for me. And so throughout the course of the years, I've built great relationships with people and companies. And so as people have grown in different business adventures, you know, and I've maintained relationships with them, it just presented opportunities. If I look at specifically with the Blazers, I've had a great relationship with former president of the Blazers, Larry Miller, who is also the president of Brand Jordan. And so building good relationships with them when he transitioned to the Blazer, it just was a situation where I said, hey, it would be great if the Blazers had a DJ. and it just happened as simple as that. And so my life has been a series of positive relationships turning into great business opportunities. That's
crazy.
The message I pass on to kids. It's like, hey, it's to your advantage to treat everyone. I don't care what they look like or how much money they have or don't have. It's to your advantage to treat people great because you never know when that person could be the person that makes a decision of your success or your failure.
Now, do you actually play music, and do you have something downloadable out there people could get a hold of?
Well, on my website, I've had music I produced, and I DJ, you know, all types of events all over the place and all over the country. So on my website, I have downloadable music. I'm actually working on a project that I consider to be a gift for the city. It's going to be an anthem of sorts, so I will most definitely keep you guys in tune on when that gets finished and released as well.
Okay, and your website so that the listeners can go to that is?
It's djog1.com, and it's spelled out djogone.com.
Okay, and that will put us in touch with David Jackson.
Yes.
Okay, David, we've got a couple minutes left here. What kind of a message would you like to leave our listeners with today?
Bottom line is no matter what you've gone through in your life, you always have a decision on whether you will allow your circumstance to dictate your outcome. For me, God has played an extremely important part of my life and has been my anchor for why I have been able to wake up every day despite what I've gone through in my life and see that I have a purpose in life. That's the bottom line for me.
And one thing I really liked is the testimonies that people have made to you in the back of this book and mm-hmm. the questions that you are asking when it comes to legacy, because you want to leave a legacy that matters behind, and you're asking us, what do you stand for? What are you doing with the talents that God has given you? Are you using them in a way that strengthens and inspires others, or has the pursuit of prosperity taken precedence? So, thank you.
You're welcome.
Definitely given us a lot to think about today, and you are well-respected and well-admired for your work. So, listeners, we've been talking with DJ OG1 Jackson, David Jackson, Jr., His book is The Man Behind the Music. Please go get your hands on it. He's a very interesting person with great wisdom to share. And did Rochelle Hart wrote this book for you?
Yes. Okay. Great friend. I give her much respect for opening that aspect of my life to the world.
Okay. Well, my hat's off to her, too, because you've come through as a message for the rest of us to read today. So God bless you. Have a wonderful rest of your week.
Take care.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of 1,000 Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at The River. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.